Welcome to the latest episode of the Dialogue Out Loud series. I'm Charlotte Hanson Terry, one of the personal voices editors for Dialogue, a Journal of Mormon Thought. Today, we are excited to speak with David Doyle about his personal voice essay in the spring 2026 issue. David Doyle has lived in Florida and works at a university. He's supporting research and academic projects there. In 2017, a blog post he wrote about his experience as a gay man of faith unexpectedly went viral, shifting his journey from quiet privacy to public storytelling. David has become a thoughtful and compassionate voice in conversations about queerness and spirituality, sharing his reflections through essays, podcast appearances, and his own blog. He also volunteers with several nonprofits that affirm queer people of faith, offering encouragement to others walking their own paths of belief and identity. David's piece in this issue is titled, The November 2015 Policy and Me. There are two personal voice essays in the spring 2026 issue, and we are glad to have one of those authors with us today. So to start, David, can you tell us more about your background and what has drawn you to the work that you do?
Hello, Charlotte, and the listeners at the Dialogue Out Loud podcast. I am lucky that I get to feel a deep sense of satisfaction in three big areas of my life. I work at a university as a research administrator. The professors do the interesting stuff, and I support them by getting their participants paid and hiring their grad students and reviewing the budget to make sure we're within the limits that we're authorized. And even though it's not the most exciting work, I love that it fosters the acquisition and application and dissemination of knowledge. That feels like a noble thing to be a part of. And at church, getting to serve is a meaningful experience. For many years, I was the primary pianist. I served a couple of years in the Stake Young Men's, and I'm currently secretary to a stake presidency, which is a lot like my regular job where I do a lot of administrative tasks, but that frees up the stake presidency to minister and to help inspire people and so on. And I grew up a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and mostly was in the closet for much of my life. But about 8 or 9 years ago, I was no longer in the closet, and that opened a lot of opportunities for me to speak up and share my voice in ways that I couldn't before. And I'm sure we'll discuss events that led to me being out as they're related to the essay that's published in Dialogue. But I went from being very reserved and cautious to having opportunities to share in a public way and to participate in organizations which help queer people and those who love them. And so that's a little about me and what kind of work I do.
Yeah, thank you. That was a really lovely introduction to all these really wonderful things you're doing. And as somebody that works in universities, I can say that the job you do is important. So like from a personal experience, I think that matters. So, you know, leading off of this, kind of hinting at your essay, can you talk a little bit more about what led you to write this particular essay and what that process in particular was like for you as you worked on it?
We were approaching the 10-year anniversary of the 2015 November policy by the LDS Church, which said that gay couples should automatically face a disciplinary council and that their children were not allowed to join the church until they turned 18 and disavowed gay marriage, which would include their parents' relationship. And Dialogue put out a request for contributions about that policy for an upcoming issue. And a friend of mine pointed that out to me and said that I had an interesting story of where that policy had a big impact on my life and suggested I share my story. As far as the process, I know that Dialogue does a great job getting academic and well-researched articles, and that's important. And this policy was a turning point for many. But the changes it made in my life are different from the stories I usually hear. So I decided the best way I could contribute is by sharing my story and the impact the policy had in my life.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you contributed this piece. It's been a pleasure to work with you on it. because of that. And so related to that, one of the things that I really enjoyed with your piece is how you don't just begin your piece in 2015. You talk about your teen years and your early adulthood. So could you talk more about why you chose to do this in your piece in particular?
Well, in one way, it was practical because it gave me a lot more that I could write about.
Yeah.
By not starting in 2015, instead with my teen years and early adulthood, I felt it would give better context of the 2015 policy and its impact. I could share what a difficult space it is to live in this intersection of being gay and LDS, and also some of the experiences I've had of feeling love from Heavenly Father and the glimmers of hope, of which especially around that time felt like we're appearing as the church softened how it spoke about gay people. And then this policy, it would have felt right at home in 1970 or 1985, but in 2015, it felt especially forceful and cruel. But this policy didn't come out of the blue. There's a long history. And so I hope by sharing about my life, it would move us beyond just a timeline of history and into thinking about the impact of these things on real people.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So kind of building off of that, can you share more about your story? I mean, you share it in your piece, but let's share it with our listeners about how that November policy impacted you in particular that you talk about.
Yes. Well, at the time I wasn't out as gay, but to a few people, I was really upset about this policy, but I didn't have people to whom I felt like I could vent about it. So I expressed my anger to God. I was yelling at my ceiling, saying things like, "Why did you let me stay in a church which clearly doesn't want me?" Mm-hmm. Sometimes you give me really clear messages, but you never thought to give me one about this.
Yeah.
I was just angry, and I wasn't expecting to get an answer. That wasn't the point, but I did get one that mm-hmm. it is fine to leave. But if you're willing to stay, there's a special work to do, which is to help leaders better understand and help queer members learn to accept and love themselves.
Yeah.
I thought I would leave because that seemed like the obvious path. But as I considered these other things, that felt really meaningful. And I didn't put it in this essay, but about a week or two later, I said to God that I was willing to stay and participate in this, but he had to open the doors. I would be brave enough to walk through them, but this is his work. So he needs to make those opportunities happen, and I would accept them. Within a few days of saying that, my state president released me from the calling I had and told me it's been made very clear to him that the Spirit's telling him that I should be his secretary, that my unique viewpoint is needed in the highest councils of the state. I thought, buddy, you don't know just how unique it is.
Right.
But when a general authority comes to my state conference, they meet with the state presidency. And that means they also meet with me, the gay man who's their secretary. Mm-hmm. And so I'm in this calling. I feel like as a result of this policy and my reaction to it and the opportunity it gave me, and that has opened up opportunities for me to meet with leaders much higher than I ever imagined. I wrote a story on my blog about the first 70 I met and told him I'm gay and how he reacted with so much kindness and love. I thought 15 to 30 people would see it, frankly.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It got 500,000 views in like 2 weeks.
Wow, and so yeah.
Suddenly I was out to everyone, and that was unexpected. And I can't blame anyone but me because I wrote it and posted it.
Mm-hmm.
And looking back, I kind of feel like it's the Spirit saying, "All right, let's get the show on the road. There's a lot to do. You playing small by hiding in the closet's limiting what you can do."
Mm.
And I think also interestingly, the answer that it's okay to leave, but I could stay, has made things easier in a way than it was before. I may not believe everything and I have some disagreements, but I'm invited to be here. And so that makes it easier to deal with some of the dissonances. It's okay that I have those differences and disagreements. I'm still invited to be here. In the essay, I wrote that I disagree with church teachings yet consider myself to be a good member. What I meant is that people can have doubts and still have faith and be a believer. I have some differences, yet I live my life in accordance with the church standards, which I think that's really meaningful. And what more can you expect of someone? And yet I still can express my concerns and frustrations and point out where we can do better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you again for sharing that and those experiences. Especially, and again, that's why I'm really excited for our readers to look at your essay, because I think this, it brings across a lot of that, but even hearing more about your experiences here is really lovely. So, you know, leading off of that, what have you noticed about, especially because you have this close relationship, again, that choosing to stay in this moment and what that's looking like for you, especially with these interactions that you're having with different leaders as a result of this and everything. What have you noticed about LDS policy since 2015?
Well, for one thing, the 2015 policy, I don't think it had the intended impact. For one thing, it was reversed less than 5 years later. And here we are more than a decade after that policy. And gay people and their relationships are more accepted by church members than they ever were, although there's still room for improvement. And sometimes these church leaders that I meet, they invite me to visit with them when I travel to Utah, and we get to have these one-on-one conversations. And, you know, I will point out, I'm not allowed to complete the covenant path. What is supposed to be the purpose of my life? Like, what is heaven supposed to look like for someone like me? And I think often they haven't considered that point of view, or they, if you were to listen to General Conference, this sounds like a church of certainty, but when I meet with them, they're much more open to saying, well, I don't really know, or we know heaven's good, so it's gotta be good for you. And, you know, it's a different kind of experience to hear top leaders talk in a way like that. But I think by my being there and having these conversations, it opens them to consider, oh, what are the impacts this is having on real people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you see the reaction? You talked about this a little bit already, but how do you see that reaction to the November 2015 policy and then its repeal later, in comparison with other LDS policies that we've been seeing, especially that affect queer members and queer people, broadly speaking, such as, for instance, the 2024 trans policy that came out?
In my piece in for Dialogue, I intentionally tied the 2015 policy about gay couples and their children to the 2024 trans policy. The 2015 policy was repealed in just a few years, and I think that was largely because church members had gotten to know gay people and didn't think it was a fair policy. And that is a powerful story in and of itself. And I hope to show that could be a guide for how the future may go with this 2024 trans policy, except that I fear not enough people know trans people in their stories. So it may take much longer. But given that, I wanted to provide a different way to think about approaching teachings and policies towards queer people, including trans folks. So even if you don't know anyone personally who is transgender, non-binary, genderqueer, and so on, you can think about if this policy would feel loving to those individuals. Does this convey God's love? If this policy or future policies were applied to you, how would you feel? What would be the message that you receive? I want to read the last two paragraphs of the essay in Dialogue.
Yeah, please do. Yes, it would be great to hear you reading them, especially in your voice. Yeah, go for it.
The church used to define how I viewed and understood myself and my orientation. In time, my queer orientation changed how I view my church. I think this is a transition that is common among queer believers. My belief in Jesus' declaration that love is the most important commandment informs how I view the policies and teachings by church leaders regarding queer people. I am created in the image of God, as are all my queer siblings, and we deserve grace and dignity, which too often has been lacking. Love is the answer. Love is the key. Love is the filter to discern God's will for us. I pray that all of us, myself included, continue to grow in our commitment to love as the Savior loves and to remove obstacles keeping people from his love.
Yeah, thank you. I love the end of your essay especially. It's just so powerful. So thank you for reading that for us as well.
Thank you.
Yeah. What are some, leading off of that, especially because of this message of love, what are some things that members could do to be better allies at church to queer people?
I've been asked this a number of times, and my number one thought is to do something. If you're already doing something, then stretch yourself and do something more. There's a number of things. You can build genuine, loving relationships with queer people. Go beyond like the superficial interactions at church and invite them to your home, invite them to lunch, ask them to share their journey with you. You can pray for specific individuals in your church, but how would you know what to pray for unless you know them and what's going on in their life? Mm-hmm. When I am traveling and visit congregations, I look for people who have chosen to wear like a rainbow pin or have a church bag with a trans flag on it or something. And I especially love when somebody comes and greets me as a visitor. And then, because it's not like I'm going around saying, hi, I'm a gay Mormon mm-hmm. when I show up. I'm just there visiting. But if they come and they have some visual indication, then I feel more comfortable because I know that they're also present. And but you can take the initiative to learn about the history and experiences of queer members. There's several books which are widely available and podcasts to listen to. When comments are made at church, which are unkind or insensitive, speak up. In my dialogue essay, I wrote that the church's general authorities are often asked about teachings and policies regarding LGBTQ people. Ask those questions. If you're in a leadership meeting, ask what we're doing to help the queer people feel welcomed in our stake and in our ward. Do we have a support group that meets? If you're in a session at a state conference and they open it up for questions and there's a 70 or somebody there, ask them, what steps is the church making to discern God's will and love for queer people? We have decades of the church showing they're okay with queer people leaving. Queer people can't do this on our own. Often we aren't in the room to make those comments or ask those questions. So if you're there, use your presence to voice that homophobic and transphobic comments are not acceptable and the concern that we must do better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, those are a lot of really great things for our listeners to be considering and do more themselves. Take those actions. Thanks for sharing those as well.
You may not start right at the end with, I'm going to go march up to the leaders and ask these questions, but you can start somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even if it's a pin, like you said, right? Just something small. That's a good place to start even too. Yeah. Are there other things that you want to bring up about your piece or other things that have come to mind as we've been talking that we haven't brought up yet?
I think as people read about my story, it's not, up until 2015, I don't think it's untypical that a queer person went to church and heard a lot of things that made them question whether God, you know, whether God could even love me, whether I could have happiness in life. And so one of the things, one of my aims, one of my things I love doing is to affirm queer people, especially queer members, and to reflect God's love to them, because it's really hard to live life at war with yourself. That is, that does not bring joy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You got to love yourself.
Mm-hmm. I'm really glad that that's something that you're doing for so many people. It's such an important thing to remember about, you know, that God loves us, and to remember to love ourselves too. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Are there other things that you're working on or projects that you're currently involved in, even that you'd like to share with our listeners as well? And of course, this can lead off of, you know, what things they can do too, but what are things that you're excited about that you're working on too?
Well, I've been active with Affirmation, which is the oldest organization, which is for queer people whose life is intersected with the LDS Church. I think they're about to hit a 50-year anniversary. So they've been around a long time. I was the Florida chapter leader for several years. I've served on their board and as vice president. Lift and Love is a newer organization, and I host one of their monthly online support groups for queer adults age 30 plus. Here in the Tampa area, my stake, I co-host a get-together for queer Mormons in this area, where we get a chance to build community and feel supported and build friendships with people who get us and our experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I've contributed to several books. I wrote a story that was included in the Book of Queer Mormon Joy, and I wrote a guest chapter from a queer person's point of view for Christian Kimball's book, Living on the Inside of the Edge. In all these things, though, my goal is to help people, to help others to understand and better appreciate and love the queer people in their lives, and to help queer people to accept and love themselves, because it is a different experience. And we often, church for us often is getting told no and don't, and not the positive affirmations that a lot of people get about their lives. So I want people to trust in their own spiritual experiences and answers, and to confidently walk forward, even if their path isn't the one that they imagined or the one which their church and parents told them it should look like. It's their life, and they can partner with God in building what that can be.
Yeah. Thank you again for all of that really great work, and for sharing these other places that people can hear your voice, you know, beyond this essay, even in this issue. So it's really a lot of reading that people should be doing, obviously, and actions too, of course, and these ways to participate and do some things about it too.
So, thank you. I originally started a blog a long time ago, over 10 years ago, and I did so anonymously because I wasn't out, because I thought, one day historians and anthropologists will look back at this interesting period of change in the LDS Church, and by writing honestly about my experiences as a queer Latter-day Saint, I could be one voice out of many that contributes to their understanding of what was happening and how it impacted people, and how queer people try to resolve their beliefs with the reality of their life, and stories about how queer people were treated at church and so on. So I imagine this essay and other things I've written will one day be included in Mormon studies.
Yeah, I agree. I think they already are part of Mormon studies, right? You're already contributing to that with all that you're doing. And so, yeah, I love thinking about that idea of in the future, us having this chance to look at these even more and remembering back to be like, hey, remember this really cool essay by David Doyle that he published and these other things that he put out there that are these really great moments in time for us to understand these personal experiences for people. So I'm glad that you've done it. I'm glad that you listened to your friend who said, hey, you can submit those to Dialogue. So.
Well, like I said, open the door and I'll walk through it. And the door was open and I took the opportunity.
Well, I'm glad you did. I'm really glad you did. So are there any other things you want to share with our listeners before we finish up?
The last thing I'll share is we think of the church as this big institution, but we experience church at our local congregation, at our ward or branch. And you and I may not have the power to change the institutional church, but we can be the church where we live, and we can be the ones that are welcoming to others. We can be the ones that wrap our arms around somebody and say, hey, come sit with me, or send them a text and say, I heard that talk at General Conference. I don't know if you just listened to it, but I wanted to check in on you and see how you're doing. And would you like to come over? Right. You get to make an impact where you live. You know, I just do my part where I'm at. And I hope that I have some influence and some impact, and you get to do the same thing where you are.
Mm. Yeah. Very wise advice to finish up. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, we encourage our listeners for you to check out all the essays in the spring 2026 issue and the other personal voice essays on the website at dialoguejournal.com. Thank you to our listeners for joining us today. If you have enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and colleagues. We encourage you to get in touch with questions or comments, and we look forward to continuing the discussion on Mormon Studies Scholarship.
Greetings, my name is Rebecca DeSchweinitz, and I'm thrilled to serve as a board member at the Dialogue Foundation and as one of the hosts of Dialogue Gospel Study. In each episode, which we record live the second and fourth Sunday of every month, we welcome esteemed speakers from a variety of backgrounds to share their insights and perspectives on the Come Follow Me lessons. Our aim is to spark meaningful conversations about the scriptures, to connect them to our personal experiences, and to our understandings and explorations of the gospel. To stay in the loop with our upcoming lessons and this opportunity to engage with Mormon thought, culture, and belief, be sure to visit dialoguejournal.com and sign up for our newsletter. By doing so, you'll receive updates and timely links to join our live stream lessons. Additionally, you can catch up on our past guests and episodes by subscribing to Dialogue Journal on YouTube, Facebook, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dialogue Podcast Network.